second hour this evening. Jeff Bennett here, Wife, Liberty, and all that jazz with our Friday night edition, Black Cat Jazz, live. Opening with the music of Charlie Parker from the album Bird, the Savoy Recordings Master Takes. Charlie Bird, an amazing, amazing player. We'll be doing a lot more on him in the upcoming months. Coltrane, many others. Glad to have you here on this second hour. Musical anthology. Getting into jazz, what it really is, man. And what does it do? It gives us a break from the reality, the pain, the sickness going on around the world, in the political world, the economic world, the world of terrorism. We tend to try to address our mental and emotional health on Friday evenings. Hope you'll stay with us. Final sets from Dr. Gordon Vernick. We'll be talking tonight about Clifford Brown. Interestingly enough, we'll not be featuring the music of Clifford Brown other than what Dr. Vernick brings us. Hope you'll stay with us this second hour. Enjoy, as I will.
This is Gordon Vernick with Jazz Insights. Today I would like to talk about one of my favorite trumpet players and also one of the most influential jazz musicians coming out of the 1950s, and that is a man by the name of Clifford Brown. He was born in 1930 in Wilmington, Delaware, and he, over the past 50 years, has been one of the most influential jazz trumpet players. He comes from a school that we call the hard bop school. He was interesting in a lot of ways. Many of his contemporaries were drug abusers, womanizers, smoked and drank alcohol. Clifford Brown was one of the cleanest musicians, jazz musicians from that period, and he was universally liked and admired by his contemporaries for living such a clean life, which was unusual because, you know, we hear stories about many musicians and their destructive habits. Clifford possessed none of those. In addition to being a wonderful individual, he possessed amazing abilities on the trumpet, this wonderful creative power, this zest for life that really comes through on his music. Clifford went to high school in Wilmington and played in a high school band, and then went to college at Maryland State University. Didn't graduate from college. At that time, when you played an instrument and played really well, you immediately went out on the road. One of his first jobs was with an R&B band, as many jazz musicians in the early 50s played with R&B groups, was with a group called Chris Powell and the Blue Flames. By 1952 and 53, he came to the attention of one of the big-name band leaders in music at that time, a man by the name of Lionel Hampton. And Lionel hired him to play in his trumpet section. Other members of that trumpet section were Quincy Jones, who, of course, is almost a household name now, Art Farmer, Clifford Brown. I can't recall the other trumpet player, but it was a terrific band. They toured Europe, and while they were in Europe, Clifford made quite a few recordings, unbeknownst to Lionel Hampton. Lionel Hampton strictly forbade his musicians, while they were touring with him, out of the country to make any records. The main reason is because he wanted to get a cut. And of course, once these musicians went to Europe, wherever they were, in France, Italy, Sweden, they were in the studios all the time. And a very funny story is that as soon as the band got back from Europe to New York, Lionel Hampton found out about all the recordings that his musicians made and fired almost every member of that orchestra. He was so angry at them. So let's talk about Clifford's playing and why it's so unique and so memorable. You have to remember that, you know, Clifford comes up in the early 1950s, and his primary inspiration was Dizzy Gillespie, but even more so was a relatively unknown trumpet player by the name of Fats Navarro. Let's listen to a little bit of Fats Navarro right now, then we'll understand Clifford Brown better.
Thank you.
Fats Navarro is really the first true bebop trumpet player. Dizzy Gillespie comes from the swing era, so he's a transitional figure, although he is one of the most important figures in the development of this new style. He really was not of it because he comes out of the 1930s. Navarro is a few years older than Clifford Brown, and by 1947 and 48 really has established himself as probably the best respected and most widely known of the bebop trumpet players. Unfortunately, he died very young, so he's not a household name today. So Clifford Brown comes out of that style. Now, Clifford was a very, very fine trumpet player, possessed great technique, amazing articulation. He was able to execute very clean, methodical lines and play very, very long, intricate, like weaving these spider web lines all over the horn. I mean, he was really a master of the instrument. And something that really separates him from his the previous generation is when he plays his eighth notes, he plays them really evenly, as opposed to the swing style of playing uneven eighth notes. I think I'm going to do a little demonstration for you right now so that you will understand what I'm talking about. These are uneven eighth notes as played in the swing era. So you can hear those notes are long, short, dee da 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 da. As we get into the bop style, those eighth notes begin to even out, and we hear that in Dizzy's playing, of course, Charlie Parker's. But Clifford Brown really takes it to the next level by playing very, very even eighth notes. So his eighth notes sound like this. Very even, and which is different. So that's one of the easy ways you can tell the bebop or hard bop style from the swing era style is the way those eighth notes are played. Another thing that Clifford Brown did was that he didn't necessarily play songs that were faster, but he could play, it was called double time, or twice as fast as the tempo. So it often made it appear as the songs were going by twice as fast when in reality the tempos were still the same. Here's a really good example of what we call single time and then double time. This is single time. Now, if I double it up or play twice as many notes, we call that double time. The tempo did not increase, I just played twice as many notes. And Clifford was a master of playing single line melodies and then going to the double time. And he did it especially in what was called the turnaround. I'll play a little bit of a great ballad called I Can't Get Started, and you'll see what I mean. So you can hear at the end of that phrase of that ballad, I went through a flurry of 16th notes. That's called double timing. And Clifford was a master of inserting it just at the right point. And of course, most hard bop or bebop musicians do the same thing, but Clifford really established that as one of his trademarks. Also with the incredibly clean articulation. Articulation would be the same as when someone speaks very, very clearly as opposed to kind of mumbling along. So his ability to state his musical ideas in his very clear and concise form is also one of his trademarks. He played with a lot of heart, very emotional, had a beautiful sound, could play ballads, could play fast. I mean, he was really the role model for, I'd say, all jazz trumpet players post-1953 or 54. The recording we're going to listen to right now is from 1953, early in Clifford's recording career. It was actually a record that was led by the great bebop trombonist J.J. Johnson. It's with the J.J. Johnson Sextet, and it's an old standard from the 1920s called Get Happy. You can really hear Clifford's playing is very, very clear, and those even eighth notes, and the way he's just bubbles, his playing is just so bubbly and effervescent. Even when he's playing something in a minor mode, it still has that kind of edge and that excitement and that happy kind of sound and that clarity that, you know, was really his trademark. So listen to him play his great solo on Get Happy. 1953, when Clifford made that tour with the Lionel Hampton Orchestra to Europe, is really when people began to take notice of him. While he was in Europe, he made probably 40 or 50 recordings, some in Sweden, Italy, France, and all the members of the group made some of those recordings. When he came back from Europe, this is when he started recording with a lot of great American jazz artists, with J.J. Johnson. He also recorded with Art Blakey in 1953 and 54, made some wonderful records. The Live at Birdland is a classic recording, although it wasn't Clifford Brown's group, it was Art Blakey's group, basically Art Blakey's messengers. And he made quite a few wonderful recordings with that group. In 1954, he formed the Clifford Brown Max Roach Quintet, which really was the quintessential hard bop group. Max Roach was a well-established bebop drummer, terrific musician, great soloist, and really one of the most important figures in jazz in the past, you know, 50 or 60 years. And the group was wonderful. I'd like to play a great recording from this period. This is his recording of What Is This Thing Called Love. Now, you have to remember that these recordings were made with no overdubbing. All the musicians were in one studio with no separation. You can hear it. Sometimes Clifford would try to execute an idea, and it just wouldn't come out quite right, and he would go back and try it again and again until it came out right. So you can actually observe the creative process and see the human side of him. I mean, a lot of records today are made with overdubbing and fixing stuff. And these records, nothing was fixed. It's just that was the way it was. And that's what also the beauty of these old records. So let's listen to What Is This Thing Called Love, Clifford Brown Max Roach Quintet.
Bit of an interlude here. Album I came across about a year ago. Recorded live in the White House, 1962. Special concert with Dave Brubeck and his group, including Joe Morell on drums, Desmond on sax. The other side of this recording was Tony Bennett. We'll not hear that today. Castilian blues. Enjoy today's Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. Black Cat Jazz. Thank you. Steve Rubeck Quartet, live, 1962, the White House, in the Kennedy years.
They'll be back. They will be back.
This is Gordon Vernick with Jazz Insights. Today we're going to continue with the music of the great trumpet player Clifford Brown. The track you're listening to at the beginning of the show was recorded in Sweden in 1953. It was part of those recordings, that clandestine recordings that members of the Lionel Hampton Orchestra made while they were touring. This was made in Sweden with some Swedish musicians, and there's actually two trumpet players on this track. One of Clifford Brown's bandmates, a wonderful trumpet player also by the name of Art Farmer. So the two of them made this recording. Actually, they made quite a few recordings in Europe, but you can hear the two of them. They play similar, but Clifford Brown's got a little more clarity, a little more snap, crackle, pop in his playing. Clifford Brown spent a lot of time in 54 and 55 in Los Angeles. You know, we tend to think of New York City as the center of, you know, hard bop or bebop activity. Well, that's really not true. There was a lot of great hard bop music being performed out in the West Coast and California, and vice versa. There were people who were playing in the cool style in New York. The next series of recordings we're going to listen to are very unique because it features Clifford Brown, the quintessential hard bop trumpet player, playing with a group of West Coast California cool musicians in music that is more highly arranged, as if it were like Miles Davis's No Net or Dave Brubeck's Octet, with lots of counterpoint and changes in texture. So let's listen to some of these interesting recordings. Of course, Clifford is still a quintessential hard bop trumpet player, but the framing of the music is a little different. Let's listen to a great old tune entitled Blueberry Hill. That same series of recordings made on the West Coast on the Pacific Jazz label is one of Clifford Brown's signature original compositions. He wrote a lot of songs. Probably his best-known composition is a piece entitled Joy Spring. And there's two very famous recordings of this composition. We're going to listen to the West Coast Pacific Jazz, which really sounds, again, like Miles Davis's No Net, kind of a cool version of it. So let's listen to the first version of Joy Spring, recorded in California, 1954. Thank you. So that arrangement sounds very much like what we call the cool style, but Clifford's style of playing the trumpet is anything but cool. It's hard bop. And on that solo, you can hear him playing single lines, and then at one point he doubles it up, like that. That was one of his trademarks, doubling that up, and he does it with such clarity and such ease, and it sounds so logical. Let's move forward to the Clifford Brown Max Roach Quintet that was based in New York, although they spent a lot of time in Los Angeles. The original tenor player in the group was Teddy Edwards, and then he was replaced by a wonderful saxophonist by the name of Harold Land. And then Harold left and then was replaced by one of the most famous tenor saxophonists of all time, Sonny Rollins. Let's listen to some of those great Max Roach, Clifford Brown quintet recordings. And these are some of the classic ones that we associate with him. This next one we're going to hear is their version of Cherokee. One of the trademarks of Clifford Brown's quintet with Max Roach was the very complex introductions and endings that they would add to songs that kind of create this musical slash visual imagery. So let's listen to Cherokee. Keeping in line with the musical, visual, descriptive introductions, I'd like to play three more tracks from the same period that show a tremendous amount of imagination in terms of their arrangements and the way they would present their music. The next one is a piece entitled Parisian Thoroughfare, which was a piece written by, I believe, Cole Porter. And listen to the musical introduction and the treatment of this song by the quintet. Listening to that piece, there is so much information. You can hear Chris Powell, the pianist, playing a bit of the Marseillaise, which is, of course, is the French national anthem. You can hear him play a little piece of Can-Can from the famous musical. I mean, there's so much clever stuff going on there at many different levels, and of course, the solos are magnificent. I'd like to say something about the group. Chris Powell was the pianist. That was Bud Powell's younger brother. He was a very good soloist, but that really wasn't his forte. He was a great accompanist. artist. He was a wonderful composer and arranger in his own right, but he was just perfect for the group. You know, the star soloist was Clifford Brown, and then, of course, Harold Land, and later Sonny Rollins. The bassist, George Morrow, was a great supportive bassist, didn't take many solos, and, of course, Max Roach, the drummer, was a terrific soloist and one of the great drummers in all of jazz history. It was a really balanced group. And everybody, you know, did their job perfectly, and that's why the group was so successful. I'd like to close this part of the show with another version of Joy Spring. This is the New York version with the Max Roach Quintet. Earlier, we heard the West Coast version that sounded very much like Dave Brubeck's octet. Now, this is the quintet version of Clifford Brown's Joy Spring.
Set coming up from Dr. Burnick here. Hope you'll stay around for it. Burnick is an interesting cat. Not only is he a jazz historian, he's a musician in his own right with his own groups. Maybe at some point in time in the future we'll actually play some of his work as well. Stay with us. Enjoy some more Charlie Parker from Bird, the Savoy Recordings, Master Takes, Thriving on a Riff. We'll then return to the final set of Clifford Brown talking about, Dr. Burnick talking about Clifford Brown, and we'll wind this program down. Interesting lessons on jazz. What is it? Opens up a whole new world, doesn't it?
Thank you.
This is Gordon Vernick with Jazz Insights. Continuing with Clifford Brown today, one of the great jazz trumpet players of all time, left us with a great body of work. One of the most beautiful records that he recorded in his short career was recorded in 1955, if I am not mistaken, with Neil Hefti's orchestra, where Clifford Brown was the only soloist accompanied by a full orchestra. And Neil Hefti, of course, was a great arranger and composer, worked for Count Basie, wrote movie soundtracks, I mean, wrote a great deal of music. Probably his most famous composition was Little Darlin', that was made famous by the Count Basie Orchestra, but was a consummate composer and arranger. Arranged a whole record of great jazz standards, of great, I guess you'd say maybe Tin Pan Alley standards that were commandeered by the jazz musicians, you know, in the 1930s and 40s, and featured Clifford Brown. It's called Clifford Brown with Strings. I'd like to play two of my favorite tracks from this. These are ballads, and you can really hear the full impact of his fat, full sound, the great phrasing, just magnificent writing on the part of Neil Hefti. Let's start with a great tune written by the pianist U.B. Blake. This is entitled Memories of You.
Thank you.
the same recording session is a great recording of Hoagie Carmichael's Stardust. Again, a beautiful rendition. Clifford Brown with strings, Hoagie Carmichael's Stardust.
The kind of stuff that you'd turn the lights down, pour a little glass of wine, grab your partner, and twirl around the dance floor for a bit. Always loved Hoagie Carmichael's music. This particular piece has got a lot of meaning to me. Stardust. I have some fun. Go look up the words. See what kind of memories it brings back. Clifford Brown with strings. Stardust.
We call Clifford-isms for jazz musicians or trumpet players. The way he would articulate the notes was very, very unusual, and it was also a very original way. The cleanliness of his articulation and his little pet phrases that he would use have really become the basis for most modern trumpet players coming out of the 50s into the 60s. I mean, he set the stage for the next generation of jazz trumpet players that includes people like Booker Little, Donald Byrd, Freddie Hubbard, Lee Morgan, and a whole school of what's known as the hard bop musicians of the early 1960s really come out of Clifford's approach to playing the instrument. With the quintet, he recorded some great songs, but he also recorded with some unusual groups. He recorded with singers Helen Merrill, Sarah Vaughan, Dinah Washington. It was recorded many times in jam sessions with large groups, small groups. So there's a lot of Clifford Brown recordings floating around out there, and I'm sure there's a lot of what we call bootleg things that were recorded at jam sessions. I mean, he was a guy that whenever there was an opportunity to play, if someone was playing in a nightclub and they said, "Clifford, come in, why don't you sit in and play?" he would come in and play. And a lot of those sessions were recorded. So there's a lot of wonderful recordings of him floating around that have not been issued on albums. In fact, I have a recording given to me by a dear friend of Clifford Brown practicing. He used to record himself while he was practicing, and after he passed away, his wife had this tape recording, and it got passed around, and I have a copy of it, and you can actually hear him working out his ideas, how diligent and methodical he was in terms of his practice and his everyday work ethic and regimen on his instrument. Clifford Brown, in his own personal life, did not fall prey to the deadly habits that really decimated the ranks of many of the jazz musicians of the 1950s. He was really a model for how to live one's life. Tragically, he died in a car accident going to a job, I believe, in Chicago. They were driving from a late-night jam session. He couldn't say no, and they were tired. And I believe it was Chris Powell's wife was driving the car, and there was a terrible accident, and three of them were killed. And he was only 26 years old when he passed. But he left this amazing body of recordings and songs and Cliffordisms, way to play the trumpet, that, you know, really set the bar very high for all musicians and especially for trumpet players. I remember hearing his recordings the first time when I was in high school and felt a sense of elation and happiness, but also, you know, as all trumpet players, when we hear somebody who plays so great, we always think, oh my God, now I'm going to have to learn to play trumpet like that. But there's only one Clifford Brown, and just that's the way I've always thought about it. You know, I can play the way I play, but I've always really appreciated what he's done on the instrument, and those recordings, they really stand as milestones in the history of recorded jazz of the 1950s. The last piece we're going to listen to is another one of Clifford Brown's original compositions, and it's entitled Daoud. It's a fun piece to play. It's a challenge. You know, he wrote songs that he played really well, and sometimes, you know, when lesser trumpet players try to play his music, it can be rather challenging, but this is one of his pieces. It's a great piece. I think all jazz musicians really owe Clifford Brown sometimes a large debt of gratitude, maybe sometimes small, but, you know, we always acknowledge his contribution to the art form. So let's leave the show with Clifford Brown's Daoud with the great Clifford Brown Max Roach Quintet.
Two-hour set. Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. Jeff Bennett bringing you Black Cat Jazz on Friday nights. I'm going to close out with some Miles Davis, who to me was one of the most amazing musicians ever in the jazz world. Didn't like some of his stuff later on in life. It became too, in some respects, I guess, racially oriented. But you know what? That didn't take away from the man's talent. Played with some of the biggest, greatest names in jazz in the 50s and the 60s. Coming up next week, that'll be an interesting surprise. Let's go on out of here listening to a lengthy set. Miles Davis from the album Jazz Impressions. Bye-bye, Blackbird. And with that, I say to you, bye-bye. Thank you.
Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian. And my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.